This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Protesting students say they won't stop until management at universities agree to meet with them to discuss their grievances.
That's reporter Yasir Ramprasad discussing university protests in South Africa. Details coming up also. French fighter jets have attacked a convoy of 40 pickup trucks carrying armed fighters crossing into Chad from Libya. And after a pre-dawn attack on a village yesterday that left 14 people dead, Burkina Faso says its troops killed 146 jihadists near the Mali border. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, it appears, based on reports that Ugandan Member of Parliament and singer Robert Chagulani, also known as Bobi Wine, is thinking of challenging Uganda's longtime president Yoweri Museveni in the next elections in 2021. Wine says Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, views the People Power movement as a formidable threat in a free election. During his recent trip to Washington, D.C., where he met with civil rights icon Jesse Jackson, Wine held a town hall meeting with Ugandans in the diaspora. He tells VOA's Jackson Mfunganye that these town halls are an opportunity for him to meet with Ugandans and exchange ideas.
Bobby, you recently had a town hall meeting with members of the Ugandan diaspora. What do you see as the role of the diaspora, the Ugandan diaspora, in Uganda's politics?
Well, the diaspora has a great role to play in the politics of Uganda, like it has always been. You realize that all the liberation efforts in Uganda have been carried out from the diaspora since whenever Uganda has needed liberation, it has evidently been clear that there's no room to operate from back home.
From inside.
Exactly. Mm. And the case is similar right now. That's why we bank so much on the efforts of Ugandans in the diaspora, America, Europe, Africa, and various parts of the world.
And recently, as you were talking to them, I saw many of them coming from different parts of the U.S. to come and see you. What kind of questions did they have for you?
Very many questions, but also many of them came with answers. You know, I come to the diaspora and, I go to people not to answer their questions, but to seek to answer the questions we ask together.
To have a dialogue.
And indeed, there are very many productive ideas that I continuously get from the diaspora and from brothers and sisters from all over.
Now, People Power as a movement is operating outside of what we know as the typical political parties in Uganda. Let's talk about historically the role of political parties, even up to now. Do you see political parties as vehicles for change or for division?
Political parties are ideally vehicles for change. Not only change, but vehicles for governance, for good governance. It's ideally supposed to be a competition of ideas and the group / party with the best ideas for the people always wins or should be the one to win. However, we are not lost to the fact that we are living in a military dictatorship back in Uganda, and political parties cannot even operate, and those that are allowed to operate in most cases are the ones that are deemed ineffective to the regime.
Now, since you took over, you became a member of parliament, you have been able to lead members of the opposition in by-elections, winning in areas like Arua, where you were arrested, and places like Bujiri.
Yes.
Why do you think you are so effective in reaching people?
I think what makes me a little different, what gives me an upper hand, is mainly the music. Music is a huge tool of communication. Having been a musician and talking about social issues through my music for a long time, and being a young person, and being fairly popular, I think that contributes quite a lot to the support and the connection that I have with the masses.
You met with Reverend Jesse Jackson. What did that meeting mean to you? What kind of conversations did you have with
him? It was amazing. Of course, I cannot have enough time to relay all the conversations we had, but it was massive. It was historical for me. You know, he's an inspiration. His team is an inspiration, and their movement was an inspiration. You see, our generation, unlike the Museveni generation, the Museveni group that draws inspiration from violent revolutions in the past, the Afrelimo, and so on and so forth, we draw inspiration from peaceful revolutions, peaceful
like the civil rights movement in America.
Like the civil rights movement in America.
Bobby Wine, thank you very much for
Thank you very much, Jackson, for having me, and God bless.
Thank you, buddy.
Cheers.
Robert Chagulani speaking with VOA's Jackson and Fungadye. Acting on a request for air support, France says it dispatched Mirage 2000 fighter jets to attack a convoy of 40 pickup trucks carrying armed fighters that crossed into Chad from Libya. The French army says its two air operations helped local troops disperse the column Sunday after it had penetrated 400 kilometers into Chad's territory. A rebel group opposed to President Idriss Deby says it was the target of the strikes and warned France that its actions could steer hostility towards the French. The Rebel Union of Forces of Resistance group said it was behind the offensive that it said was aimed at unseating Idriss Deby, thinking France wouldn't intervene. Idriss Deby has faced several rebellions since seizing power in 1990 in a military coup. Burkina Faso says it hit back hard after a pre-dawn attack on a village yesterday left 14 people dead, with troops backed by air support killing 146 militants near the Mali border. The army said it mounted three operations and suffered only light injuries. Islamic extremists have increased attacks in Burkina Faso's volatile Sahel region in recent months, and the fighters have stepped up their activities across the region. Leaders of the so-called G5 Sahel, Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger are meeting today to discuss how to coordinate their efforts in fighting the militants. Reflecting their agenda, security was tight for the summit. A key highway linking the airport and the conference was closed off to non-summit traffic, and troops were deployed at regular intervals. Students at several universities and colleges around South Africa are protesting over financial aid and accommodations. Classes at some campuses in Durban have been suspended, while there have been disruptions at other institutions that have included damage to facilities. From Johannesburg, Yasira Ramprasad has the story.
Protesting students say they won't stop until management at universities agree to meet with them to discuss their grievances. The South African Students' Congress has raised concerns about fees, accommodation, and transport. Deputy President Luyanda Tenge explains.
There is generally across universities and TVET colleges accommodation crisis, and we believe that the management at universities and the department itself, they are of a low speed in addressing the issue of historical debt, accommodation, disbursement of allowances, and also the infrastructural development.
Based on meetings so far, Tenge claims the only way to get the attention of university management is through protests.
We are ready for their call anytime to come and discuss a way in which is going to solve these issues that we are raising. But in the meantime, if they are not willing to come, we are going to continue protesting, because it's not like we just went to street and protest. We have made endeavors to meet with managers. In other instances, we have met with them. They were arrogant. They could not want to listen on our demands.
While protests at some universities have been peaceful, other institutions have seen property burned and damaged. Some non-protesting students have been intimidated, and cars entering the premises have been stoned. Some students say they are losing out on time and want to continue with classes, while student representatives try to arrange meetings with management.
I'm personally against these protests because it's not getting me anywhere, and it's not getting these learners who are protesting, getting them nowhere, because they're just like burning infrastructure, and therefore this will be an increase in our student fees, and I think these students don't know that.
Our academic program has been suspended until further notice. I don't think that it's fair for all students to suffer just because one group of students are unhappy. Maybe they do have their reasons for being unhappy, but that doesn't justify such violent behavior.
For the past few years, the start of the academic year at tertiary institutions has been marred by violent protests. The protests in 2017 resulted in former President Jacob Zuma announcing free higher education for poor and working class students from 2018. But some matters like accommodation on campuses, transport and food still continue to be a thorn in the side of families who earn minimum or below minimum salaries. University management have not yet said anything about the protests or students' grievances. Meetings have been taking place at some institutions, while students at other universities wait to hear from management. I'm Yashira Rampasarth for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Singer Robert Chagulani, also known as Bobby Wine, is thinking of challenging Uganda's longtime president Yoweri Museveni in the next elections in 2021. And French fighter jets have attacked a convoy of 40 pickup trucks carrying armed fighters crossing into Chad from Libya. And Burkina Faso says its troops have killed 146 jihadists near the Mali border. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Zambia's profitable copper mining industry is making its citizens poor, according to a report by a Southern African research group. The report traces the troubled relationship at one mine in rural Zambia, run by the nation's internationally well-regarded First Quantum Minerals, and the rural community that surrounds it. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Measured purely by its underground wealth, copper and gold, Zambia should be one of the world's richest nations. In 2018, the Southern African country exported more than $700 million worth of copper, the majority of Africa's copper exports. But above ground is a different story, say researchers from Southern Africa Resource Watch. The watchdog group probed conditions at a copper mine run by First Quantum Minerals in Solwezi, a city in northwest Zambia. They chose to investigate this particular facility because the Canadian mining company, which is Zambia's highest corporate taxpayer, has a good reputation, says researcher Edward Lange.
But then what we discovered was that the wealth that Kansanshi mine extracts does not match the poverty, the disorder, the poor social conditions, which is prevailing in a shanty town of Solwezi. It is a provincial capital of the northwestern province of Zambia, but it could be termed to be a shanty town. They've polluted, they've displaced people in the community, facilities that they provided, cannot quench the amount of pollution that they've caused on the community.
Zambia began privatizing its mines in 1997, so citizens have no direct claim over the mineral wealth. They do, however, have a right to clean air, soil, and safe conditions around the mines, says Lange. Lange spoke to VOA from the outskirts of Africa's main mining conference, the Mining Indaba, held this week in Cape Town. He was not attending the high-powered annual gathering of Africa's industry chiefs and investors. Lange spoke from the alternative Mining Indaba, a grassroots meeting of mining-affected communities, faith-based organizations, and rights groups. VOA sought comment from First Quantum Minerals, but the company did not reply. On its website, the company said it had found that its operations contribute almost 4% of the total economic value added to the countries in which we operate. The nation's mining minister, Richard Musukwa, echoed that rosy picture. He spoke from the sidelines of the Mining Indaba in Cape Town.
The effect of the mining industry on Zambia and its communities has been overwhelmingly positive. It has brought jobs, growth, education, and infrastructure development. Where there is wrongdoings, breaches of regulation, or abuse of the Zambian people, and unsafe mining method, this government will actively and immediately intervene to ensure that the lives of our people are guaranteed.
So where does that wide disconnect come from? Lange blames a gap between the government's strong words and the ability to enforce them. He says mining companies often implement changes in the surrounding areas without consulting locals. One of the main messages from activists at this year's mining gathering, says Lange, is that mining giants must collaborate more with communities.
This is a sad African story of a big investment where the communities are not benefiting. It's a failure, you know, the failure to use the abundant mineral resources to transform the lives of the people is what is worrying us. And this is at the center of discussions across the continent.
The Alternative Mining Conference, now in its 10th year, has provoked increasing crossover between the two events, says Lange. One multinational mining giant paid a visit to the Alternative Conference this year to listen to activists and communities. Authorities should require all mining companies to participate, Lange says, instead of just letting them harvest millions in wealth from places like Sulawesi, as the locals live in poverty. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kenyan health officials say unsafe abortions are common in the East African nation, with nearly 500,000 in one recent year. Abortion is prohibited unless, in the opinion of health professionals, there is need for emergency treatment or the life or health of the mother is in danger. Advocates for less restrictive policies argue that unsafe abortions contribute to a high level of maternal deaths. Rael Ambor reports from Nairobi.
Martha Hope, not her real name, was married with three children when she became pregnant again in 2010. The 33-year-old woman says her husband told her he was not ready to bring up another child in poverty. At 6 months, she visited a neighborhood clinic that was willing to provide an illegal abortion. The doctor mixed some concoctions for her to take. Martha says she started bleeding and that she sat in a bucket full of cold water. As she put it, "I was sweating and losing strength. The fetus came out, but now the problem was that the placenta did not. I passed out." Martha is now on medication for depression as a result of the trauma she experienced. A 2018 report indicated that nearly 500,000 unsafe abortions occurred in Kenya in 2012. Justin Kamau, a nurse at Provide International Hospital in Dandora, says back alley abortions are all too common.
We may get 3 to 4 cases in a month in our facility, but remember there are others who die at home, who may be maybe no one to bring them to the facility. Maybe they opted not to tell anybody.
For the last 30 years, the Marisops organization has provided a wide range of maternal health services, including family planning, safe abortion, and post-abortion care in Kenya. The organization says 7 women in Kenya die daily from unsafe abortions. Dana Tilson is the Marisops Kenya country director.
There are multiple causes for this, including restrictions in the law for safe abortion and including lack of information by women and girls about where to get safe services. And there's also, particularly for young people, limited access to contraception And when you have a situation where contraception is limited, there's a stigma around younger people getting pregnant and having sex before marriage.
Last year, the Kenya Film Classification Board banned a Marisop's media campaign that sought to raise awareness about unsafe abortions. According to the board, the campaign encouraged teenagers to obtain the procedure. Marisop's was then temporarily banned from providing safe abortions in the country. Virginia Nehemiah of Crisis Pregnancy, a faith-based Christian organization in Kenya, says her group helps women make a different choice.
The issue of choice only considers two choices, carry or abort. There are other choices, but people don't always talk about them. There is adoption. How many families are out there are not getting babies and they want children?
Tilson says women terminate pregnancies for various reasons.
They have an unwanted or unintended pregnancy. They're often desperate and they don't know where to go. And no matter what, they're going to terminate that pregnancy. And so they'll do anything to do that. And so often they will go to a backstreet abortionist. And these quacks are very dangerous.
For decades, the U.S. government has been a big donor for family planning services in Africa. However, the global gag rule that President Donald Trump signed when he took office in 2017 bans the U.S. from giving any money in development aid to any overseas organization that promotes or provides abortions. This has affected operations of NGOs such as Marisop's. When the gag order was signed, Marisop's said it lost about $30 million for multiple countries where it had been receiving U.S. funding for family planning. The World Health Organization estimates 25 million unsafe abortions take place globally each year, with almost all in developing countries. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the West perpetually talks about its democratic values, self-determination, and freedoms. Can these concepts become realities in Africa? Discussing freedom of expression on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.